Hi, welcome. I'm Elizabeth Blair, and I'm in the studio with Glenn Weldon, who writes about comic books for the pop culture blog Monkey See for NPR, and Jim Lesher, who works behind the scenes on the operations desk here. We're here to talk about Joseph Michael Straczynski, who is the screenwriter for Changeling, the Clint Eastwood movie, but he also has this other side of his career, which is writing for comic books and as a science fiction writer, something you two know a lot about. Glenn, is it true that he has quite a loyal following as a comic book writer?
Yeah, I'd certainly say that. Comic books have changed recently. Writers have become a more central presence in comics because now they have actual followers. It used to be that you would follow your character or your team book through thick and thin, no matter who was writing it. But now there are certain writers who have a reputation for doing X or Y well. So there are certain writers that people jump on a book for, and there are also certain writers people will jump off a book if that person takes over.
The comic book world, he's known as JMS, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
Is he one of the rock stars within the comic book world?
Yeah, he's one of them. He certainly is. What he's known for, I think, is his dialogue. He's really known for a very clean conversational style, which makes sense because he came out of television. And television is a medium that really is all about dialogue. It's about two people or more, sometimes more than that, just sitting around talking. Film is a director's medium, but television is really a writer's medium, and it's driven by dialogue. So it makes sense that he is now using dialogue to kind of characterize a hero instead of just do what dialogue did back in the early days of comics, which is just kind of stand in as almost a radio script. You'd see a panel of Superman flying toward Metropolis with a meteor hurtling toward it, and Superman's thought balloon would say, "Great Scott, there is a meteor hurtling toward Metropolis." That stuff has sort of gone by the wayside lately. And what's happening now is that they're using dialogue the way good fiction writers use dialogue, to characterize and to differentiate one character from another. And that's something he's really good at.
Jim Lesher, what kind of a style does he have? What's distinct about his writing?
The crop of writers that we have out there now that Glenn was mentioning, very few of them use what I think is called the omniscient narrator. There's very little in terms of kind of an all-knowing person to say, well, that's the end of the story, or we're going to shift to. That was something that I actually think is missing, because it makes it easier to follow a story when you have a dialogue, a box at the top of the page to say, we're going to shift now from the Himalayas to New York, and we'll go back to New York in just a minute, but for the moment we'll do this, and then that helps drive things along. That's how, when you're 6 or 7 or 8, that's how you learn to read and follow the story.
Yeah, we've lost the meanwhile. There's no more meanwhile captions anymore. Or back in issue 6.
Yeah.
Or even something like stay true believers, anything like that. Yes. That sort of voice is gone.
That's asking a lot these days.
And the thought balloon is gone. The thought balloon is completely gone, replaced mostly by these captions. When you do see captioning, you see it as it's basically the main character's thoughts, and that's how they place it. It's a very subjective view we're getting nowadays.
There are many, many writers who've done Spider-Man, correct?
Yes.
Who's taken on Spider-Man.
Quite a few.
Yeah. And I remember seeing an interview, I think it was at Comic-Con, with Straczynski, and the interviewer was saying, you know, a lot of comic book fans are upset with what you did with Peter Parker. You're nodding your head, Glenn.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, he wrote for a very long run, 6 years, and that's a huge amount of time in comic book world. But what happened was he decided that he would go so far and no further. He wanted to kind of take Peter Parker and Mary Jane. He wanted to put them back together because writers, editors actually, have long said that when they got married back in 1987, and ever since then, the editors have kind of been trying to break them up one way or the other. And Straczynski, when he came on the book, he said, because at that point, Peter Parker and Mary Jane were separated, he said, I'm going to bring them back together and show that a couple can be functioning, happy, and still interesting. So they were kind of partners in crime fighting almost. It was basically just like watching a married couple living their lives.
And is that what upset fans? Or?
No. What upset fans was that Joe Quesada, who's the editor-in-chief of Marvel, decided that not only did he want to break them up, he wanted to break them up in a way which sort of strains even comic book credulity. He basically wanted to have a demon come along and say, not only were you, are you no longer married, you were never married. And a lot of the stuff that had happened over the past years of Straczynski's run just would get blown away. Now, to hear Straczynski say in interviews, when he's politic, he says, you know, I just decided I would stop writing when I wanted to stop writing. But at Comic-Con and interviews like that, he'll say, yeah, we just had a difference of opinion. I didn't want to take the character where they wanted to take the character. Is that kind of what you hear?
I would agree with that. In the defense, though, of what their decision to break up Peter and Mary Jane, for me, who had to drop it and come back, it has helped for me to make a fresh start of this. Mm-hmm. And they're doing, at least in the Spider-Man books, they're including footnotes again, editor's notes, which they didn't used to do for a long, long time.
Getting back to Straczynski again for a second, he gets a lot of credit for using the internet early on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right away, he knew that was a really important thing to do. But I did, I don't know if you noticed in the transcript of the interview, but when I said, does it inform your writing at all? And he said, no.
No. The fans are lovely people, but the problem with television is it's already a committee to begin with. And the larger that committee becomes, the more watered down the stories become as well. The last thing done well by committee was Stonehenge and the Pyramids. And I don't want to pull that into what I do.
He interacted with fans in a very sort of basic, sort of authentic way, which he did sort of the first blog, really, that kind of where he kind of informed fans of here's what's going on. The writers came in. Here's the writer's room, that kind of stuff. That is now taken up by some sort of non-genre shows or even genre shows like Lost. And it's sort of slick. And they do these quote unquote viral sort of games. And it doesn't have that same sort of feeling where you're talking to or hearing from the writer. The guy who has inherited that, I think, is probably Ron Moore, who writes and runs a show called Battlestar Galactica, which also has this very sort of one-on-one conversation with the fans. And that kind of started with JMS.
When I talked to Straczynski, he did single out a favorite Spider-Man of his, which is based on 9/11.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that story? What happens then?
What happens is that Straczynski had just started writing Spider-Man, and I think 9/11 happened just a month or two after his first issue came out. And so there are about four or five issues of the storyline that he had done, and then it just stopped. And here's this one single issue with an all-black cover, Amazing Spider-Man on it, that's all about 9/11, specifically in New York. And it's this, as he says in the beginning, there are no words. And a very interesting thing, they have the Marvel Comics' most incredible villains, Doctor Doom, Magneto, I think Juggernaut and so forth, and they're saying that even what happened on 9/11, it's not something they would do.
Right, and when you hear the summary, it sounds like it kind of skirts the boundaries of taste, having Spider-Man show up at 9/11, at Ground Zero. But what's really remarkable about it is how restrained it is, how far he pulls back. And it had to happen in a certain sense, because the Marvel Universe, all Marvel heroes exist in the real world. They exist in about a five-square block of downtown Manhattan, really. That's where most of them hang out. So you needed to have some kind of reaction. You needed to kind of hear what, not necessarily what Spider-Man would say, but what the Marvel sort of imprint would be. Mm-hmm. And it did it really well.
I just wrote down on a piece of paper, there are no words. And from this came, for lack of a better term, a prose poem meditation on 9/11, written about a month after the fact, which to this day, I'm not quite sure where that came from, because it got written in 45 minutes. Every time I go to a convention, I see firemen and teachers and parents who got that book and were moved by it, and they used it in classrooms to teach kids about 9/11. They used it in sermons, believe it or not. A fire department in New York passed the book around amongst themselves and cried over it. And you realize that, you know, comics, it's a funny medium. It's one not often taken terribly seriously. But every so often, you do something where you can be kind of on the side of the angels.
Are you surprised that he wrote this screenplay to Changeling, which is based on a true story? This is not comic book science fiction at all. Mm-hmm. Does it surprise you?
Not me.
Why?
No, because, well, I mean, he's always struck me as very, very confident, self-confident in his own writing. He's written a few stories that are not all science fiction. For example, he did a series that was called Midnight Nation. And, you know, the fact that he's writing a movie doesn't surprise me. That's what he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a writer first and a science fiction, quote-unquote, writer second. Mm-hmm. I mean, his stuff is very grounded. And he's using science fiction to say something about today. So, and why not use historical fiction to say something, or historical nonfiction in this case, to say something about today?
Right. And he has a background as a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, well, thank you very much. Glenn Weldon writes about comic books for NPR's pop culture blog, Monkey See. And Jim Lesher works behind the scenes at NPR on the operations desk. And I'm Elizabeth Blair.